Fat Chance by Roy Trumbull, copyright 2009, Chapter 10, Big Bear Lake. After Coroner Bob had gleaned everything from Ralph Nixon's body that was possible, it was turned over to phosphorus recycling, and a modest memorial service was attended by his mother, a few of his co-workers, and some old wrestling buddies. A day later, Coroner Bob received a copy of the test results on the mysterious exhumed bodies from Professor Fendel. While it was interesting, it didn't shed any light on the murder of Nixon. Abe needed a break to try and clear his thoughts, and he made a call to Carlos Zeit. Carlos had become something of a recluse, but he was always glad to see old friends. Abe and Carlos first met in high school, and ever since they'd bounced ideas off each other. Sometimes 5 years might go by, but eventually they'd rekindle their friendship. Carlos had been the man the news services called to find out why the stock market had moved up or down on any given day. Sometimes the reason was rather pregnant, but most of the time there was no reason. Carlos had been good at making up short, pithy headlines to fill the space reserved for them on the financial page. Now he was something of a philosopher. He'd suffered the tragic loss of his wife and youngest son in a car accident, and several years ago had been diagnosed with cancer. He'd had surgery. He was waiting out the 5-year clock all cancer patients watch. The things he'd reveled in were no longer important. Now he sought to reflect and find his direction. In the late spring and through the summer, he was at his cabin at Big Bear Lake. Abe valued Carlos as one who could provide keen insight when Abe felt he'd lost his direction. Abe took the train to San Bernardino and rented a car. The winding road up to Big Bear Lake would consume most of the battery pack, but Carlos had solar panels and a wind turbine generator, so no problem. Marilyn stayed in L.A. because she had an early meeting Monday morning and couldn't count on getting back in time. As he was driving, he thought about the time he'd gotten a call from Carlos. He was considering suicide. Abe could understand that. But Carlos said that when he'd applied to the state for a permit, the obstacles had been formidable. First, there was a questionnaire to be filled out that had nearly 500 questions. Plain old questions were fine. It was the continuum questions he hated. 1 was most likely, and 10 was least likely, with 5 being neutral. There was no option to say a question didn't apply. Without that option, you just had to figure some grocery store was missing a bagger who instead was writing these idiotic questions. He pinned the questionnaire on a tree and threw darts at it. Then he crumpled it up and put it in his charcoal starter. The other requirement he hated was that the state wanted him to go for 8 weeks of psychiatric counseling. A psychologist would have been okay, but paying someone $150 an hour to say, "Why did you say that, or feel that, or think that," was like listening to an echo in a tunnel and almost as valuable. How they managed to keep that dodge going year after year since the 1930s was a puzzle. Obviously, a shrink had been in a key spot on the committee and got that written into the rules of the Suicide Bureau. Carlos had considered just doing the deed and stiffing the state its fee. The downside was that he might mess up. We lack training on how to take our own lives. There's a lot of folklore, but little useful information. The Suicide Bureau had come about because of the complaints from the emergency room doctors who were getting sick of patching up botched attempts. They were weary of the endless string of amateurs who'd done the deed yet were still kicking when the ambulance brought them in. As a result of the ER doctors' lobbying, one had to take a class, Self-Extinction 1A, before a permit could be issued. If you still screwed up, they'd dock your estate for costs incurred at the hospital. Carlos, with encouragement from Abe, had finally thrown up his hands and decided to live. That was 3 years ago. When Abe pulled up the gravel driveway, he recognized Carlos, though his black hair was now more salt and pepper. He hadn't put any more weight on his 6'2" frame. He was pretty much as Abe remembered. Carlos' craggy face hadn't changed. The two friends greeted each other first with a handshake and then an embrace. Abe had a laugh at the boat dock that extended out from the front porch. The lake hadn't been within 150 feet of the end of it for 50 years or more. Carlos hadn't bothered to tear it down. There was a screened porch facing the lake where one could sit in the evening, minus the mosquitoes. The front entrance opened on a sitting room with a small couch and several easy chairs. There was a small fireplace that Carlos used only if he was there in winter. Off to the right was a hallway leading to two bedrooms and a bathroom, and straight ahead was a small kitchen. Abe went into the kitchen and unloaded a bag he was carrying that contained wine and spirits Carlos favored but couldn't get at the local liquor store. The lake was stocked with trout, and Carlos knew several avid fishermen who wouldn't be caught dead eating a fish. Therefore, the fridge was stocked with fresh fillets ready to cook. Carlos heated up a pan and got busy. He didn't like to cook over an open fire, as the results were often uneven. He felt much more in control using his propane stove. Abe had brought some fresh spinach and other veggies and set to work on making a salad. Then he slid a loaf of sourdough to make garlic bread and stuck it in the oven. Soon the kitchen was full of the kinds of smells no stomach can resist. After dinner, they set out on the screened porch. The sound of crickets predominated. In the dusk, Abe could see bats swooping to pick off the moths and other flying insects attracted by the cabin's lights. Carlos contemplated his beer and said, "The Egyptians brewed beer back in the days of the pharaohs. Of all the things we consider so important today, 1,000 years from now, only beer, wine, and booze can be counted on to still be with us." By his third beer, Abe mellowed out, and the mystery of the Ralph Nixon murder became just another murky shadow. Maya listened to the guys talk for a while, but then decided to call it a night and drifted off into the closest thing she knew asleep, which was power save mode.